So we've got quite a lot to cover this morning. The idea was to give you kind of a 100-level view across most of the platform. So we'll spend a bit of time talking about Azure itself. We'll discuss a few of the features of the platform, intertwine a little bit of demo, so it's just not all PowerPoint. And then we'll finish up with some closing and continue through from there. So just before I start, how many of you know about Azure, have been using it before and a little bit familiar with it? Good, good crowd. And those of you haven't heard much of it before and just think it's a shade of blue? A couple of you, okay, that's good. I hope that you do find out a little bit more that you perhaps didn't know before. And for those of you that don't know much about it, I hope you get a lot out of the session as well this morning. Just before I do start, I just wanted to frame the conversation around cloud services a bit. We hear a lot of acronyms talked around infrastructure service, platform as a service, software as a service. And there tends to be a little bit of confusion in terms of what these things actually mean, especially with infrastructure as a service. You know, there's a lot of conversations that I have with customers, and they'll be sort of asking questions like, okay, so I move my VM to the cloud, and how do you back up and protect my stuff for me? How do you patch my servers? And we're like, well, that's not actually something that we do. So you've got quite a clear demarcation point there between what the service provider is doing for you and what your responsibility is on top of that. But also when you think about these different services and how they sort of transform into a bit of an IT strategy, the further right that you move on these four bars, the more efficient they get, the more agile you get, because you start to focus more on the application outcome and less on the underlying infrastructure below. High agility and those sort of things. When we think about Azure itself, our biggest value is the fact that we do both of the middle bars together. This is something that's been pointed out by Gartner in the recent Magic Quadrants, where we're the only public cloud provider that's a leader in the infrastructure service and the platform as a service Magic Quadrants. So what that means is that as you start on this cloud journey to the right and you move some infrastructure into the infrastructure service as a component, there's also some platform services that you can take advantage of as well. So rather than having to go off and deal with other providers, you can do that all within the same family. And I'll talk about a couple of these different features that we have, both the infrastructure side and the platform side as we move forward. But just to make it a bit more real, so we all understand how we like to eat pizza, the same analogy is pretty much around, you know, a lot of us like to dine out and eat pizza and order pizza online because all we want to do is really eat pizza. We don't want to spend the time at home making our own pizza from scratch or going to the supermarket and buying a pizza to reheat it. So in the same sort of analogy, software as a service, as I've gone and dined out and for my pizza, the traditional approach to IT has been I make my whole pizza every time I want to eat it. So you can see the biggest value we get is how quickly can I go and eat pizza. So it's just a different approach on that continuum. So when we think about Azure itself, there's some key benefits around public cloud we address, but there's also some enterprise capabilities that the platform's designed around as well. So in terms of public cloud benefits, you know, there's a common ones that we probably all know about, you know, the speed, agility, the economics and those sort of things. The speed aspect of things is that what you'll find is you can do things a lot faster in the public cloud than what you can traditionally do on-premise. And some of the demos that I'll show you is just how quickly, for example, we can spin up a virtual machine. You know, these things mean that you can get time to value quicker, you can fail faster if you're developing. These are all great things to enable us to get faster to our outcome that we're looking for and spend less time actually trying to get there with the infrastructure aspect of things. The economics type of things is really important. If you think about a lot of the infrastructure you run today on-premise, your server utilization is sitting around sort of 25-30%. So there's a lot of wastage sitting there. In the public cloud, you're paying for exactly what you use. So there is no wastage at all, and you're getting true value out of that investment. And then thirdly is around the scale. You know, what you do is you get access to infrastructure on demand. There's no more, I'm only constrained to the infrastructure I have on-premise. But you also have access to a global network of data centers as well. So now you can start to push applications and services closer to where your users are around the world, as opposed to them all coming back to you. From an enterprise perspective, there's some really key things that we start to differentiate ourselves on. And these are some of the points I'll talk through in a minute, is around how we have this cross-premise integration between your environment and the public cloud. How we start to think about running workloads that are non-Microsoft workloads, and this is a big thing you're starting to see more and more of us is actually, you know, being very open about the different technologies we work with. And then thirdly, which is probably the most important one, and this is probably the biggest conversation we have with our customers today, is around privacy security. So how can I be safe in the knowledge that when I start to move my workloads to the cloud, that I'm not opening myself up for undue risk and that sort of thing as well. So from an integration aspect of things, Moxos vision is around, you know, public cloud is just another destination for a service. This is really about how we underpin and combine a combination of your on-premise technologies and the public cloud as well, but also where service providers fit into this as well. So Keith from Rivera is doing a session, I think it's tomorrow, on some of the work that Rivera's been doing around how they integrate the Rivera data centers with Azure. Datacom's been doing some great work about doing hybrid connections as well. But we see that this is a big value prop for us. You know, hybrid is a reality for the next few years. Not all workloads will work in the public cloud. So as Steve Martin mentioned yesterday in the keynote, you know, this concept of hybrid is very much a reality for us today. So it's all about how can we extend our infrastructure into the cloud and take advantage of that where I need to, while also addressing on-premise stuff. But then what we do is wrap around that a lot of common technologies which you're already using today. So managed around Active Directory from an identity perspective, you know, from the development toolset with Visual Studio, System Center, Visual Studio Online, SQL, and Hyper-V, all sort of wrapping together. So essentially, as you move towards Azure, you're using a whole bunch of common technologies which you're already familiar today, so it's not a big learning curve around how you start to adopt public cloud capabilities. From a heterogeneous perspective, you know, there was a time where people thought that Azure was a great platform if I'm a Microsoft shop, but if I start to use open technologies, it's perhaps not the place for me. But we've made big investments ensuring that open technologies are a first-class citizen, just like Windows and Microsoft technologies as well. So obviously we have full support for Windows Server, but there's also four or five distros of Linux that we fully support on Azure as well. Common databases around SQL Server, Hadoop for an open source big data capability. You would have seen recently that we announced support for Oracle. So we now got fully certified support by Oracle for their full stack on our platform, and also with SAP. Around mobile devices and all the common mobile devices, all the common open source content management systems. And then also from a development framework, you don't have to be using Visual Studio and .NET to build an application and run it quite successfully on Azure. So we support all of the major development frameworks as well on our platform. So once again, a very open and broad platform. So pretty much we are open arms to all sort of workloads running today. From a security perspective, you know, I think there's three things that we think about here, and this is the sort of stuff that becomes really, really important for a lot of organizations. There's a lot of big misunderstanding around public cloud. Data sovereignty is obviously one of those things that pops up quite a lot. From a transparency point of view, we're very much about building trust through being very transparent. We have major certification on our platform, so we're all ISO 27001, SOC 1.2 compliant on our platform. So all of those sort of major certifications are there. We've got a lot of great information on the Azure Trust Center site, which I'll show you shortly. So if you've got any questions at all about what happens around privacy of my information and security and compliance and those sort of things, there's some great information that we have in there, which means we can pretty much answer every question that you have around that. We also offer full SLAs on our platform too, the monthly financially backed SLAs. But again, you know, we're very open about this technology. We're very open around how we deal with security and compliance, and that's all part of the trust that we're building with our customers. Secondly, is about the relationship. You know, a big thing from us is that you get to deal with the Microsoft people you already know today. So most of you would know four or five people in Microsoft New Zealand. You know, if you ever had a problem on Azure, you can call any one of those people and they're probably there to help you. And so I think the account management aspect of things is quite important. It's not just now a voice on the phone. You actually have real people that you can talk to here in New Zealand. We offer a lot of flexibility in how you purchase Azure. So most of you would have an enterprise agreement with your software licensing. You can just simply add Azure into that as well. It just becomes part of your billing relationship with Microsoft. And also with our partners that we have in a market locally here in New Zealand and also with Microsoft Services as well. There's a good ecosystem of partners able to help you on this journey as well. And then thirdly, from an experience point of view, whilst Azure to most people is kind of a new product, we've actually been doing cloud services longer than anybody else in the industry. So there's about 200 odd cloud services that we run, and this dates right back to, you know, the late 90s when we built our first data center. So we've got a lot of experience around running cloud services at scale. And all this comes to bear when we start thinking about Azure as well, moving forward. So some of the unique value props that we offer around the product, obviously it's an integrated enterprise-grade platform, you know, around the support aspect of things, the software support that we offer on our platform. This concept of hybrid, the fact that we can extend our environment into your data center. But the third point, and this is something that Steve touched on yesterday in the keynote as well, is this concept of hyperscale. And so when we start thinking about hyperscale, what do we mean? These are some of the sort of the scale numbers that we're talking about when we start thinking about Azure as a global platform. There's about a million SQL databases that we run in their platform. we have around 300 million Ada users using Active Directory. We're storing about 25 trillion objects in Azure Storage. You know, that system's running around 2.5 million requests a second. These are sort of really, really big numbers. And thirdly, you know, we have about 17 regions globally that you can adopt. And so how do customers take advantage of hyperscale? What does that mean when they start thinking about building new applications and trying to do things in an innovative way? This video is an example of what that would look like.
Traditionally, building any sort of server technology has been pretty difficult for any developer. Game developers in particular like to focus on the creative aspect of the game and build more around the core game. So from a server perspective, we saw cloud computing as an opportunity to introduce, you know, hands-off, scalable, on-demand resources so game developers could focus more on the game.
So what that means is there's data centers all over the globe. And when you start up the game, it figures out where you are and what the best connection to which data center you have is.
One of the advantages of cloud computing is the elastic scalability, the idea that compute exists in the cloud when you need it.
It'll spin up a server, a dedicated server in a server farm, basically, for you on a fast connection with, you know, fast CPUs. It makes matchmaking really quick, and then once you're in the game, it's a really consistent experience. You don't have people doing lag switch killing. You don't have host migration. You have just solid gameplay that's fair for everybody. If anyone asks for a server, just throw them a server. And then we replenish that pool from the cloud. And so when we need another one, we just grab it down, put it in our pool, and hand it out to somebody. So it's this constantly available set of servers all over the globe for anyone.
One of the things we're seeing that's really amazing about Titanfall is the idea that a lot of the AI and the non-player character is actually powered by the server.
That would not be feasible to do on a game that's client-hosted.
So they have this ability to adapt over time, change and tweak the game even after the discs have shipped. Without sort of interrupting user gameplay or, you know, making users download big patches or things of that nature.
It's a more even experience. There's no host advantage. There's no, you know, kind of worry about who's hosting what and, you know, do we have to now reserve performance on everybody's machines? We can maximize what we're doing, knowing full well that on the back end, we have power there to take advantage of the game.
For the first time, I think users are seeing why server technology is really going to make next generation gaming that much better.
So how many of you have played Titanfall? A lot of you. Yeah, so every time you start that game, we spin up an Azure VM dedicated to you. And so, you know, as you sort of heard, it's a really interesting example of how now we don't have to have big power in the console anymore, that we can actually offload a lot of that processing power into the cloud, so to speak. So Respawn's a great example of how they're sort of leveraging a global platform to deliver some great innovation. And there's about, you know, over 100,000 VMs that run in the back end for Titanfall. So it's just an example of how customers are leveraging that scale. So I mentioned around the 17 regions that we have globally. This is our data center footprint at the moment. You'll see the ones that are most interest to us is down here in Australia. So in the next few months, you'll start to see the announcement coming out of the general availability in Australia. So we're really excited about that. But you know, today we've operated out of the regions we have on the map you see here. We also were the first public cloud provider to open up in mainland China. So if you have a China operation, you want to put some cloud services there, then we can certainly help you there too. It's an important to note is that all of our data centers are paired with each other. And so I'll talk about what that is from a storage perspective to us, but we do that for around availability and these sort of things too. So when you start thinking about, okay, this cloud stuff's all kind of out there and I don't really know much about it, what does this thing actually look like? This is an example of what one of our data centers looks like. This is the Quincy data center. It's about 3 hours east of Seattle. Why this is sort of interesting is it kind of for a few reasons. The first, it puts in perspective the sort of the scale of these platforms. If you look at the top to the bottom and the left to the right, that's around where Microsoft is down the viaduct to the other side of the New Zealand building, and then all the way down to the end of Silo Park, just in terms of a physical footprint. couple of things that's interesting in this photo as well was that it shows the evolution of our data center rollout. So the big white building is essentially what we call our Generation 2 data center. This is when you go through it would be like any traditional data center, raised floor, hot oil containment. There's about 10 deployment areas inside the white building, and those deployment areas are running different cloud services from Microsoft. But what you've got off to the right-hand side here is our Generation 3 data center, and this is when we started to move towards a modular data center. So this is essentially 20-foot containers packed full of servers. So the white building here was a first take on that. We were basically, we build what looks like a shipping warehouse, and inside that is a number of containers. What you've got above that, and then in the building site, is we just stopped building the building anymore. And so these systems just sit out in the open air. So that photo that I showed you at the very beginning of the presentation is actually looking off to the top of one of those containers. But what that means is that we can rapidly deploy out services. We don't have to build big buildings anymore because the time to market for that for us is about a year to build the whole data center, whereas now we can rapidly deploy out services as our systems grow. You know, our biggest data center today is around 5 megawatt of IT load. The Gen 5 data centers that we're building at the moment is around a 35 megawatt load. Put that in perspective, if we were to take 50% of one of the generation units at Huntley, that would be dedicated to powering one of our data centres. So you can see some pretty big numbers that we're starting to deal with here as well. This is an example of what it looks like. So again, part of that openness and that transparency is we've got a lot of white papers that talks about how do we build our data centres, how do we build our servers. This is an example of what our server rollout looks at now. So we've actually published this in the Open Compute Foundation. So if you're really keen, you can go and download that reference architecture and get some components and build yourself an Azure server. But it's just an example of what we're doing and how we're sort of building trust. You know, those data centers that I talked about, we do public tours of those data centers. So as a customer, if you want to come and see where your servers are going to be running, then we'll do data center tours there as well. So when Australia opens up, we'll be doing tours in the Sydney and Melbourne data centers there as well. We think that's a big point of difference for us. You know, there's other cloud providers will tell you that, you know, it's the cloud, you don't need to know where these data centers are, they're a secret. As far as we're concerned, this is all about how we build trust, you know. And so we've taken a number of New Zealand customers up to the Quincy data center, and they've been through that environment, and the feedback's always been that it just really helps them confirm that they've made the right choice in their provider, where they can actually see how we actually do this sort of thing. So it's pretty cool. So from a cloud perspective on Azure, you're only paying for what you use. We have per minute billing with a minimum of 1 minute. So you can get really granular in terms of how you manage your costs from that perspective. We don't charge for your VMs when they're stopped. So what this means, if you're running your development environment and you shut you down your environment at 5 p.m. and then bring it back online at 7 a.m. in the morning, you're not paying for unused compute in the middle of the night. So you can start to really adopt that cloud economics by getting really granular in terms of how you manage your systems as well. We've had around 95 new features in the platform over the last 12 months. The rate of innovation on Azure has been huge, and it's actually been outpacing the rest of the market. One of our competitors will talk about the features I've been releasing. A lot of those have been incremental gains. You know, a lot of what we've been delivering is brand new features to market. So what the platform looks like today is vastly different to what it was looking like 12 months ago. So we're constantly in this state of evolution and new features coming to market. And then from a local perspective, we've had some fantastic growth here. Just in the last 12 months, we've had almost 250% growth in the New Zealand market alone. And this is just a small selection of some of the customers that have come on board with us on this journey. So doing some really, really great stuff. You know, Zespri is an example of one organisation that's really sort of pushing the boat out a little bit in terms of how they want to adopt cloud services. So they're doing a hybrid solution with Datacom. But around 90% of the infrastructure is going to be running in Azure, and that includes SAP production when we go live later in the year. So doing some really, really great stuff there. The guys in Datacom are doing a talk on that on Thursday morning. And we've got some other sort of local ISVs running on the platform as well. So Merlot Aero and Serco, VMob, are all ISVs that are basically doing business globally off our platform with a development environment locally here in New Zealand. So again, for those guys, they could never have achieved global success without public cloud being around. And so they've made big bets on us, and it's been paying off really well for them as well. So yeah, having some really great success here at the moment. So that's sort of an overview of Azure and sort of what we've been talking about in terms of the platform capability itself. What I'd like to do now is sort of just start to dive into some of the different features in the platform. The first place I'll start is around virtual machines. This is the most common place that most people land when we start thinking about going to public cloud. So from an Azure perspective, obviously, as we spoke about, we have Windows Server and Linux support as well. A lot of support for our application stack running on our platform too. A lot of open source workloads as well, and some networking capabilities there too. So with that, I'll switch over and we'll take you through a couple of things here. So this is the Azure website. It's got a great number of information in here for different things you want to know about. So all the different features that we have on the platform are all fully outlined in here. There's a lot of great information around all the different services and capabilities that we offer on the platform. From a pricing perspective, you can get full pricing in terms of how much systems are going to cost. There's a calculator online here, so you can quickly put some numbers in and have a look at sort of what your cost of running a few VMs in the cloud is going to look like. From a documentation perspective, there's some great information here for documentation. So around virtual machines, data services, app services, networking, how do I configure a VPN connection, for example, how do I configure my ExpressRoute connection, automation. So automation is a big part of Azure. It's nice that I can go and use a portal, but just like a lot of stuff in PowerShell, if I can do that stuff in PowerShell, I get a lot better value out of that. So Nick from Provoke's doing a session on Friday afternoon around automation in Azure, but there's a lot of automation scripts that we have here, so all the heavy lifting's ready to be done for you. Do a little bit of base configuration on there. You can start using those scripts to get some value out of that as well. And then from a support perspective, this is the Trust Center site here. So there's a lot of information around security and compliance. Some really great white papers here as well, talking through different privacy capabilities, compliance, how do I build applications in the cloud, these sort of considerations. So I encourage you to go and browse through the Azure website. There is a ton of information in there. So hopefully you get some great information out of it as well. Also, if you wanted to just get started with Azure, you don't have an account today, there's a little free trial button here. You can click that, sign up, and we give you a $250 credit for a month, and you can go off and start using Azure to your heart's content. But from clicking on the portal button here, we end up in the Azure portal. Today, this is what the portal looks like. So down the left-hand side, we have all the different services that we have on the platform, and in the middle are the services that I've got running in my subscription at the moment. From a virtual machine perspective, it's new virtual machine. And then we have a nice gallery here that we can start with. So what we have here is basically a lot of the different images that we have on Azure ready to go. So from a Windows Server perspective, we have 2008, 2012, 2012 R2. Then we see some of our server applications are now packaged up ready to deploy. If you wanted to do a SharePoint trial, then you can build a SharePoint server here. There's SQL Server images as well, so if you wanted to run SQL Enterprise or SQL Standard on a virtual machine, but you don't have a SQL Server license, then you can use a license included image from here. And then the price you pay just includes the cost of SQL for that period of time. But again, with that permanent billing means I could run that SQL workload for 3 days, test my project, and then shut it all down, and that's all I pay for is 3 days. I don't have to go and buy SQL licenses for a 3 day project anymore. BizTalk, Dynamics all supported here. And then obviously with the Linux support that we have, the Linux images around Ubuntu, SUSE, CentOS, and then Oracle. A lot of the Oracle applications are now in the gallery as well. So again, some of these are license included images, or you can bring your own Oracle licensing if you're running Oracle today. Thirdly, if I have an image on-premise that I want to run in Azure, then you can simply take that ISO, that VHD image, and upload it into Azure, and then build your VM off that. You can also build images in Azure itself for you to repeat as well. So if you've got some images like my gold image here, then I can click on that and use that as my base build as well. So you don't always have to start from scratch every single time. But just from a Windows Server perspective, I can go through and give the server a name. We have different tiers of VM. So the basic tier is essentially just what it is, a basic VM. It doesn't do scaling. It doesn't do some of the smart features we have. These are great for just dev workloads where I just need a basic virtual machine. The standard ones are far more fully featured. And there's a whole different t-shirt size in terms of different VMs that we offer on the platform as well. So you can simply just choose the size of the VM that you want. Login name. And then you can also choose a data center. So this is all the different regions that we have around the world. So I can choose whereabouts in the world I want that VM to run, what storage account I want to use. And then some of the other things that we're starting to do. Some of the other things we're starting to do is inject in some platformy type services into the build time of the VM. And this is the way, this is done in the case of VM agents, what we call it. So if you're using Chef or Puppet today, you can actually inject the Chef or Puppet extension into your VM at build time. And also from the security perspective, if you're using Symantec or Trend Micro or Microsoft anti-malware, again, you can inject that into the VM at build time. So it's just one less thing you have to do after the VM's already been built. You simply just tick the box like so, and that will just install the extension for me. And then tick the box, and it's going to head off and start booting my VM for me. But like any good cooking show, while that's running, here's a VM I created earlier. And that's just essentially giving me an RDP shortcut to that virtual machine. And then once that's connected, that's just a virtual machine, just like I have today. Just happens to be sitting in west coast of US. As he goes through. So I'll wait for that. So once the VM's up and running, there's a few things we can do from a, there we go. And that's just our Windows Server VM, and then I've got the ability to go through and configure that VM and do what I want to do to it. That's my build, and off I go. So, you know, quick and easy for me to get my VMs up and running in the cloud. Once that VM's actually up and running, there's some monitoring capability that we give for you as well, so some core metrics around the performance of VM and what it's up to. My host name, IP addresses, that sort of thing. Once I've got my VM built, I need to add disk to that so I can store my data. The data disk is persistent, so if you boot the VM or shut it down, you don't lose your data. That's just a matter of clicking attach empty disk, and then once that's attached, you go into server and configure your disk. We also have the ability to then reconfigure that virtual machine on the fly. So if I've started with a basic VM, I can quickly change it to a standard VM if I wanted to. If I want to resize it to a bigger VM, I can do so. I just reboot the server and now I've got a VM bigger. This is really interesting because you know, a lot of what we do on premise today is saying, well, you get given a 4-core 8-gig VM because that's all my infrastructure could provide for you. But in some cases, that's just not good enough. Clive Trott from Treasury is doing a session actually after this, and part of the things that he's talking about is when they started on this journey to this project, you know, the first thing IT would have asked him is, okay, well, for this infrastructure, how many VMs of what configuration do you want? And he was like, well, I don't really know yet because we haven't really started the project, so he'd be making a guess. And in some cases, he'd say, well, okay, I'll have a 8-core 14 gig VM, please. So the IT would run off and provision the infrastructure for him, and it turns out I actually need a 32 gig VM for that because memory is not enough. Well, we can't provide that because we don't have enough memory in the farm, that sort of thing. Whereas here, we're able to quickly just go in and basically tick a box, save that, and it's going to reboot the server, and now I've got a VM of a much bigger size for me. So just nice and easy for me to make those changes as we go through there. So in terms of how we connect to Azure, there's a few different ways that we can do that. The most common way recently has been just over an IPsec VPN. So you create a virtual network in Azure, you connect that on-premise. That means that you can use the same IP address ranges that you've been using on-premise. That means you can use your on-premise AD servers. You can connect to on-premise infrastructure. This has been nice, but it is running over the public internet. Some people think, well, it's a security risk for me as well, and it probably doesn't provide the performance that I want. So having dedicated connections to the cloud is then where we can really step up around the applications we start running and the things we start doing. So we have a service called ExpressRoute. We offer this globally today. There's a couple of different scenarios we have for that. The first one's called an exchange provider option, and the second one is called a network provider option. So the network provider option is essentially provided through the global telcos like AT&T and BT and Singtel and those guys, where essentially Azure just becomes another node on your WAN. So you don't have this sort of step process through another provider. Essentially, my data center is just like my data center is connected in my on-premise environment today. So it's used by some of our global customers that are looking for that sort of capability. The most common one, though, is in the middle bar there. When Australia comes online later this year, we will be offering ExpressRoute out of New Zealand. Snap and Cordia are two telcos that we've been working with today to provide that capability, and that will give you a 200, 500, 1 gig or 10 gig connection direct to the cloud. So essentially, they provision into an ExpressRoute partner location in Sydney, and then we connect that into Azure in the back end, and then you've got a dedicated connection. So there's lots of different ways here that you can now connect and extend out your network to connect in there. So I've touched on a couple of points around virtual machines and networks. You know, it's really high level. Stu Fox tomorrow at 3:10 is doing a session, a much deeper dive on infrastructure service. The aptly named title of Getting Foxy with Azure AWS. So if you don't have that in your schedule, I encourage you to add that in. And he'll be going into a much deeper session around the virtual machine capabilities of Azure. So we sort of talked about, you know, Azure VMs and what you can do with those, and you can run all your server applications on top of that. The cool thing you can use the VMs for is dev test, and that tends to be the one where a lot of our enterprise customers today are sort of starting with. As they start thinking about moving to the cloud, it's going, well, actually, I could move my dev environment, start using that for development and test and what we have there. How many of you have MSDN subscriptions? How many of you have activated your Azure component of that? How many of you didn't know you had Azure for free as part of that? Some of you. So I encourage you to go into the MSDN portal. There's a little activation button there for your Azure benefits. Depending on the edition of MSDN that you have, we give you monthly credits, up to $200 per month. These are then highly discounted services, up to 97% off our rack rate for Azure services. So you can actually do a lot of stuff with it. You know, for example, you can run 80 VMs for a 20-hour load test, all for free within the MSDN benefits that you have today. You know, the MSDN premium is worth us buying you about 33 bottles of beer. So it's quite a nice sort of value prop that we offer you there. And it's a great way for you to get started and start using Azure. All of your MSDN software then comes along for a ride with it as well, so you're free to deploy all of your MSDN software into Azure. This is quite a unique thing for us in the public cloud, is that, you know, it's the public cloud that can run your MSDN software for you. As part of your MSDN benefits as well, you also have the ability to run a Windows 7 or Windows 8.1 desktop image in Azure as well. So if you're doing some dev test in the cloud and you need a client there to be associated with that to do some testing on, then you can actually build a Windows 7, Windows 8 machine in the Azure as well. That's the only place that you can run Windows client on public cloud. So, you know, it's a nice little solution there. And then we give you a nice sort of summary dashboard. So this is an example of my one. Recently, it just shows you what your burn rate is, how much money you've got left in your account, if you're going to run out or not. By default, we enable a spend limit, so which means that you'll never get charged. But if you did have a project where you've kind of run out of money and you need to sort of carry on, then you can click the remove spending limit button. You'll then get charged. You can then re-enable that at a later date. Some sort of good stuff there. So we sort of talked a bit about infrastructure service and what you can do with that. And that's, as I said, probably the most common thing that a lot of people think about when they're going to cloud. But there's also a whole lot of stuff that we can do on Azure, which enables you to focus more on the application outcome and less on thinking about the infrastructure underneath that. And so this is an example of some of the services that we have. The way to think of these are like finished services or managed services that we do the heavy lifting for you on the back end, and it means you just get time to value at the front end of that. So for example, you know, Azure websites, media services. So media services was one that Steve mentioned in the keynote yesterday that we worked with NBC. So they're able to scale up and use a global media services platform for the period of a few weeks for the Sochi Olympics, and then just basically turn that infrastructure off again. So they had no origin servers to build, none of that sort of capability. It was all delivered as a service. SQL databases, HD Insight, which is our big data capability, Active Directory, some really great selection of different services that we offer on the platform, as I said, which enable you to get faster time to value. So an example of that is SQL database. So SQL database is a relational database as a service. We then do the heavy lifting on the back end for you around backups, around high availability. It's essentially a fully managed service as a database. And so I'll show you a quick view in terms of what that looks like. So the time to value side of stuff is kind of what's key here. When you think about today, if you're going to go install SQL Server on a server today, you would go and build the VM. Once the VM's built, you would then get that VM ready. You would then get your SQL media and you'd install SQL Server on top of that, and you do the configuration required around that. And in some cases, that could take days, and some organization that takes weeks to go through the entire process to get myself a SQL Server that's ready to go for my application. What we have here is basically a way to turn that completely on its head. So I'll just give it a name. Uh, We've got different tiers of database depending on what you need it for. So if you just need a basic database, we have the Web and Business Editions. If you need really high-performing databases, then we've got sort of the basic, standard, and premium. Those premium SKUs then also give you global replicas, so we've got high availability, backup options, and that sort of thing. So you can see I can choose the size of database that I want, up to 100 gig. And then in about 4 or 5 seconds, we'll get ourselves a SQL database up and running. So you can see there in less than a few seconds, I've now got a fully replicated 150 gig SQL database all up and running in Azure. And so once we've got this up and running, again, I've got a dashboard matrix. So we'll start to show performance information that SQL people like to see around deadlocks, failed connections, successful connections to that database. If I then need to then connect that database to my application, I've got my connection strings for my different frameworks that I'm working on there. So I can just copy and paste and connect to that as well. We also have the scaling again, so I can change the size of that database on the fly. So if I decide that I actually don't want a 100 gig database anymore, I need a 20 gig database, then I can just save that. It's going to reboot that. It's just going to save those settings for me. You see it's been updated already now, and I've now got a 20 gig database. So in the time it's taken me to do that, I think we'd still be trying to write down what the requirements were from the DBA, from the SQL database. There's no SQL licensing required for this. So if you are sort of building apps that require databases in the back end, then this is a really, really great way for you to be able to use that as well. Again, focusing more on the application outcome and less around building up the infrastructure underneath that as well. So Azure Websites is another service that we have, is around how we start to build web apps. So if we're thinking about building a web application and I need a database, well obviously SQL database will be the database I'd use in the back end. Then my presentation and my web servers is what we offer on Azure Websites. So essentially you can build this with ASP.NET or the other sort of major development frameworks as well. You can deploy this in many different ways, through FTP, through Git, through Visual Studio Online, web deploy. There's a whole bunch of different ways that we can then publish up that way as well. But it provides you an easy way to scale up as demand grows. So again, I'll just flip out and show you what the Azure website bit looks like too. So there's a couple of ways that we can do it. One is we can just build a website directly out of the portal and then publish to that. The other thing we can do is actually do that out of Visual Studio itself. So within Visual Studio, we've got the Azure SDK, which then brings a whole lot of Azure services directly into Visual Studio. Developers really love this because it means I don't have to run off to a different place to do some work and then come back. I get to use the same program I'm using every day in my day job. So I'm just going to sort of do a really basic example here of what that may look like. Here I can basically tick a box that says I want to host this website in the cloud. So I click OK. So I give it a name for my website. I can then choose, again, whereabouts in the world I want to host my data, my website. So I might choose, I'd like to put that into West US. And then click OK. And so what that's now doing in the back end is while it's building my project, it's actually running off and building me my Azure website in the back end too, automatically. So now I can start, you know, going into my app and making my changes that I want. And then I have the ability to basically publish this directly out of Visual Studio. And so this is the website that I've built here, and I just go and click publish. And so what that's going to do now is race off, and it's just going to start uploading that website information up into Azure. So while it's just doing that, what's actually happening in the back end and what's actually going on is when it's gone through and built that new website. So if I've gone into the portal and gone new website and given it a name, or I've done it within Visual Studio in that case, what Azure's done is gone off and built you two IIS servers all ready to go. So again, if you're thinking about, I'm going to go and deploy this website, I've now got to build a VM and enable IIS on that and then configure it and do the configuration. I've now got to do two of them. I've got to load balance them. You know, we'd still be thinking about planning out that deployment. In the back end, we've already done that for you. Basically, within seconds, I've got a website up and running that's now highly available. We've also put load balancing in front of that for you as well. So I can build my website using the tool of choice. I can then publish that through my deployment service of choice, and that gets published up into Azure itself. So then as people go to my website, they will hit the virtual machine. If lots and lots of people go to my website, the systems will scale up automatically. So the load balancing will scale, the website servers themselves will scale. If in the back end we happen to have a server failure, we'll automatically recreate another VM for you and deploy your application onto that. You don't have to worry about any of this at all. You just focus on building your website and deploying your website to the cloud, and we take care of running that for you in the back end. Some other interesting stuff that we do also is this ability to then do scale. The auto scaling is pretty cool. So what I can do is actually change the instance size of my virtual machine that I'm running on. There's different tiers of websites that we offer, so anything from a free website through to a fully featured, you know, dedicated server just for you. So you can change the instance size that you want depending on performance. We can then also do scaling by a couple of metrics. One is we can do it by time, or we can do it by CPU load. So what you could say is, look, between 37 and 80% server utilization, and I want to run between 1 and 3 instances. And you can change that just by moving the slider. So again, you know, I don't have to build my website for peak load anymore. I can start small and then grow and shrink on demand. Again, I'm only paying for what I'm using that period of time. So it's a really nice, efficient way that you can start to get some control around your costs of running web applications, but also do it in such a way that you can scale up to meet demand automatically. The other metric we can do is then by times. You can say, you know, between 8 a.m. and 5 p.m., scale up to 10 VMs, but overnight, just run it on 2 for me. And so it's really easy to do that within the portal. Click your saves, and then off you go from there. So it's pretty neat. An example actually of some customers that have used that before was EasyJet. So EasyJet in the UK had a reservation system. They've sort of worked out after many years that people don't like to race to a plane to get on the seat before the next guy. They actually like to choose a ticket with a seat number on it. But their reservation system had no way of being able to manage that system itself. So what they did is they built the seat reservation part of their application in Azure itself and then connected it to their on-premise application. What that meant also is then they had scalability built into it, so that when they did their big sales, when they put their big summer schedule on, and they had tens of thousands of people hitting their website, the system would scale up automatically for them and then bring that down on demand. So just a, you know, nice, easy way they're able to do that as well. And just through in the course of this conversation, I've now published a website. So if you go to techhead2014woohoo.azurewebsites.net on your device, you better hit this page now. And that's just give an example of how quickly it is for us to go and deploy apps to the cloud. I haven't had to build any infrastructure. Microsoft's running it all for me. I get the outcome, which is you can go and view my website for me. So yeah, just a pretty cool way that we can get speed and time to value around that as well. So everything that we do in Azure is underpinned by storage. So we call this blob storage. It's a highly scalable, highly durable storage system in the cloud. Again, like all of our services, we offer monthly SLAs on that capability as well. So we've been recently in the cloud storage report that came out last year. Azure Storage got rated as a top performing cloud storage provider globally. There's so much information that we're storing in the cloud now that it'd take you over 300 million years to try and read through all the different information that we're storing in that platform today. So some of the things that we do around cloud storage, which is a little bit unique for us, one is we make multiple copies of your data straight away. So as soon as I write data into Azure, we create 3 copies of that data and spread it around the data center. The second thing that we do then, if you tick a box called georeplication, is then we replicate another 3 copies to assist the data center. So when Australia comes online, that will be Sydney and Melbourne, and it means that you've got 6 copies of your data in 2 geographic separate data centres, all protected with a 99.9 monthly financially backed SLA. So in the case of Sydney going completely offline, for whatever reason, you've got a copy of your data in a second data centre. There's no configuration required on your part at all. This happens automatically for you. So it's just another sort of the unique things that we're doing there. One of the solutions that we brought out about 18 months ago that enables you to take advantage of cloud storage was a product called StoreSimple. So StoreSimple is essentially a on-premise SAN that's cloud connected. The idea being is the data that you write into regularly stays locally on the SAN itself, but the data that's old or inactive can be moved up to Azure, where it's about 3 cents a gig per month. It's a really nice integrated solution that we have. We've had some great success with this product here in New Zealand over the last 12 months. We've got the StoreSimple multiple appliances actually sitting in the hub. So through Morningtea, whatever, if you want to see what it looks like, it's a sand, but it's sitting out in the hub for you there. Ben DeQuell, who's one of our StoreSimple TSBs, he's doing a session on Thursday morning all about StoreSimple. So again, if you don't have this in your schedule today and you're quite keen to see what cloud integrated storage looks like, then I encourage you to head off to Ben's session on Thursday morning. Some other things that we're starting to do now around high-level services is a new thing that we've brought out called Azure Site Recovery. What Azure Site Recovery does is gives you disaster recovery as a service. Especially here in New Zealand, a lot of our customers don't do DR very well because it's kind of really expensive. So it tends to be the large enterprise customers that have a really good DR strategy. But a lot of our medium-sized organizations just don't have the investments required to basically do full DR. So in some cases, it's a sort of a point of failure. What we're offering with Azure Site Recovery is this ability for you to have any-to-any replication to the cloud. So now what that means is you can use Azure as your DR site. You could be running VMware on-premise, and we can replicate that information to Azure, which is actually running Hyper-V, but it doesn't really matter anymore. What we've done is just completely removed any blocker around, I run this hypervisor on-premise, or I run this physical server on-premise, therefore I can't use Azure. This is a great solution. It's come from an acquisition we made a few weeks ago called InMarge. InMarge were a global leader in around disaster recovery solutions as a service. So it's an application layer replication technology that we put in. So two things we can do is, one, we can then manage the site-to-site recovery for you so you don't have to pay expensive software licensing to other vendors for DR. But more importantly, we can do this as a service into Azure as well. So again, on Thursday morning, we've now got the longest title in TechEd's history on screen. So if you can write all of that down, this is going to go into much more depth around Azure Site Recovery and some of the other disaster recovery solutions that we can help you build on public cloud. So Active Directory. Active Directory in the cloud. This isn't sort of a copy of my AD information sitting in the cloud. Essentially, Azure Active Directory is identity as a service in the cloud. Where this is really interesting is when we start to integrate that with your on-premise infrastructure, which enables you then to provide seamless single sign-on capability to cloud applications. So one of the biggest challenges we have now as we start moving into the world of software as a service is we're starting to lose control of the identity around that. You know, most organizations now are running 4, 5, or 10 cloud applications, and the way that they manage those apps is a user logs in with their Gmail account. You know, Dropbox is an example of that, where now I've got people using their personal login storing company information in a third-party storage provider's environment, and I've got no control over that anymore. So a lot of the work that we've been putting into Azure Active Directory is really about helping you manage the sign-on capability and identity control to those third-party apps while leveraging all the great information you have today inside Azure, inside your on-premise Active Directory environment. So you start to bring that right in. So just quickly, what we've actually been doing with that is a feature called My Apps. So My Apps is essentially a sign-on dashboard that we provide for our customers. So you go to the My Apps dashboard, you log in here with your corporate credentials. So like every good Microsoft demo, I work for Contoso Enterprises. We also offer some branding and Zaxxas stuff in the background as well, and the ability to double check that you put your password in correctly and spell the name right. And so what that's going to do is log me in. I've got an on-premise AD server that's been connected. We're just using DirSync in this example here, but you can use DirSync with Password Sync or ADFS, in which case we won't have to log in. But essentially now what I have is a dashboard of all the different applications I use in my business. And I can then simply go through and click the app that I want to connect to, and I get single sign-on into that application. So now I'm starting to manage the identity connection from the different applications. I don't have to have users remembering different user and passwords or the risk of people leaving and still have logging information. This is all done automatically through Azure AD. The Twitter example is an interesting one. You know, a lot of organizations now have social media presence. The way that the marketing team have access to Twitter is all the marketing team know the username and password of a Twitter. One of the marketing people leaves, he just knows the username and password, starts tweeting on behalf of the company some really inappropriate things. So this way that you start to bring that in, if I'm a member of the Twitter user group in AD, I have access to Twitter. If I'm not, I can't log into it. So people can come and go and it doesn't really matter. I'm managing all of that connection through AD, which is the single source of my truth for my information there. So some great stuff that we've been doing with AD. And Tom from over in the Australian sub's doing a session on Thursday as well around migrating identity-centric apps to Azure. So again, another session to chuck into your title. So just a couple more things as we start to finish up. How many of you have been looking at things like desktop as a service or looking at ways that you manage applications better to users on any device? Some of you. You know, the interesting thing with desktop as a service, it's sort of become a big thing a lot of people are talking about, is really that's a way that I'm surfacing apps to users on a device. But really, all I really care about is the app. But we give them a desktop and then an app on top of a desktop, which I've already got, which is my PC or my tablet or whatever it may be. And then for the users that aren't that tech savvy, they've got a desktop on a desktop and they minimise the desktop you've given them. And then they ring up IT and go, I've lost my apps. And they're going, what do you mean you've lost your apps? And I can't connect to my servers anymore and my desktop's gone all funny and all they've done is minimise the desktop window. What we're doing with Azure Remote App is essentially is RDS as a service. What you do is you take your session host image that you have prepped with all your apps, you upload that into Azure. When you go to new remote app service, we're then building you an RDS farm for you automatically in the back end. All you care about is publishing your apps, where you run the infrastructure for you. So as hundreds of people log in, the infrastructure will scale up on demand. As the demand falls off, the infrastructure will shrink down as well. This is a great service, really, really quick and easy. The whole thing about, oh, it's in the cloud, it's going to be late and it's going to be slow, is a big fallacy. The performance that we've seen is the apps, like things, even things like Word and Excel, open as quick through Remote App as what they do off your local PC. So if you go to the Azure website, you can sign up for a free trial of this. If you've got an MSN subscription, you can enable that as well. Again, on Friday morning, we've got a whole session dedicated to Azure Remote App. So again, if you're got some time free on Friday morning, really encourage you to head off to this session. There's some great stuff in there as well. So in terms of what we've covered through today, obviously I've sort of touched across quite a lot of the platform in terms of what Azure is. We've touched very lightly on just a selection of some of the features. As you can see in the portal, there's an awful lot of capability we have in the platform today. So to kind of do a what is Azure session is getting harder and harder for us today. So I hope that you sort of got a little bit of a touch in terms of what we're doing there. What we sort of talked about is some of those core scenarios you can get started with. You know, a lot of customers go, this platform's great, where do I start? Think about how you can manage your storage better. Think about how you can use a platform to develop and test and run your applications. Think about how perhaps you can extend it and that sort of thing. So some sort of great opportunity for you to get started there. Again, there's some more sessions here related. If any of you are from the public sector, really encourage you to head along to Clive Trott's session after this one at 10:40 a.m. Treasury have done some great stuff with us in Azure running one of the core applications. So Clive's doing a session about his whole journey along the DIA process and GCSB around moving to Azure. So there's some great sessions here as well. Obviously the obligatory evaluation slide, which is great. But before we go, we've got some things to give away. So for those of you that can see, you would have noticed some little prizes sitting down here. So through the course of the Azure sessions we're doing this week, we're going to be giving away some phones. So if you took note of some of those sessions I was writing down, make sure you attend, and if you're lucky enough, you may go on to draw to win a phone here. But before we all finish up, here's the website. There's my email address and my Twitter handle if you want to get hold of me. Just from a logistics point of view, I think the question answer thing is probably going to get hard. So if you want to see me afterwards, feel free to do so. Otherwise, I'll be hanging around TechEd all this week.